Welcome to Popular Cultural Sharing. My name is Lawin and I am your host. In this podcast, we give you an outsider's perspective about European life, culture, and pretty much anything that is connected to this continent. So get ready to learn something new in a light and entertaining way.
All right, so welcome back everyone to Popular Cultural Cherry. Today we have a very special guest from Scandinavia. We haven't had anyone on our show from that part of Europe. And what makes it more special is the fact that she's actually lived in the Philippines for a long time. I met her through Instagram, which is, you know, during the pandemic, one of the ways how we actually meet new people. She runs her own Instagram page where she talks and actually dives very deep into culture, language, and different topics that are more related to moving abroad and adapting to a new culture. So, Leah from Norway, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to talk to you about culture and adjusting and adapting and all of that.
The interesting thing about Leah, to me, if you say Norway, like her kind of face would pop up, but actually she speaks fluent Tagalog, which is the language in the Philippines. And if I kind of close my eyes, I would just, you know, speak to her as I was speaking with a friend back home. So that's what I find super interesting about her, because it's not that common actually to hear people from abroad come to the Philippines, love it so much that they actually take the time to learn about the culture, but also to learn the language. Leah, maybe you could give us a little bit of background about your interesting story and what actually made you, you know, come to the Philippines.
Yeah, that is kind of a long story, because I moved to the Philippines for the first time when I was 19 years old, like straight out of upper secondary before I studied. So I went there for a short like mission training. And then I ended up staying. It was supposed to be 6 months. And I ended up staying 2 years and 6 months in the Philippines. And I worked as a volunteer. And I used to live with Filipinos. You know, we live together. We travel together. And I picked up on the language, but I didn't learn it properly. So I moved back to Norway. I started to study. I started to work. And I always wanted to go back. I was like praying and dreaming of going back to the Philippines. After I got married, there was a vacant position for a couple, meaning they would hire both of us. So we applied for the job and we got it. And then we moved back. And that was the time when I started to study the language properly and learn it properly. So yeah, that's the short version of it. But in between, I've studied language and culture, because during my first day, I was really fascinated by the culture. And there was this South African lady in my organization who was trained in culture. She was a counselor trained in culture as well. So she would, and she was older than me. So she was my ate, as we would say in the Philippines, like an older sister. And she would explain situations to me. She would be like, Leah, did you understand what happened here? And I was like, I understood everything that was said because people speak English. Yes, but did you understand why they were laughing, why this was funny? And I'm like, no, I understood the words, but I don't know why it was funny. Then she would actually break it down for me and explain it. So somehow I got that introduction to deep culture from her and from my deep experiences, because in my organization, I got deep friendships. So we would talk about like life really deeply, and I would see other responses to what I shared than what I would receive in Norway. And that started to change me at that point already.
Yeah, so you mentioned that, you know, you first came to the Philippines. But what was that first trip of yours? What was that about? Was that just, you know, for travel, for fun? Or was that part of like an exchange student program?
In Norway, many young people will do a gap year before they study. So we have some special schools where people will study something they're passionate about, like theater or arts. And it's not related to career development. It's more of personal development. So we have that tradition of young people doing a gap year for something. And that's what I started doing. Like my gap year was going abroad, doing a mission training. And I just wanted to experience another part of the world. And I applied many places. And it so happened that the Philippines was the one that responded first.
So when you found out, oh, the Philippines has now accepted like my application or whatever to do this project, what was your initial like assumptions of how the life would be in the Philippines?
I had no idea. Like, I was 19 years old. It was my first time to move abroad ever, or to move out of my parents' house ever. So that was my first time to be like independent. And what I did was I flew straight to Asia. I moved to the Philippines. So it was a big, you can't imagine, that was a big shock, but I was ready for it. Like, I was so curious and I wanted to learn. But my, like, the first thing that happened when I came there, I was sick. I had a fever. I was sick for some time. And the first thing that happened was that I ran into cockroaches. And the cockroaches in the Philippines are very big, you know,
yes.
Very big. Like, they would be more than half the size of my cell phone, like 2/3 of my cell phone. That's the size of cockroaches in the Philippines, right?
Right.
I had never seen anything like that in my life. I didn't even know what it was.
I can imagine. I mean, 19 years old, you fly halfway around the world to some place you don't really know, you don't understand. So different from your culture. And yes, we do have quite a lot of cockroaches. Something I do not miss about our country. And it's actually a joke, like everyone's super tough in the Philippines until you see a cockroach. Not just any cockroach, but a flying cockroach.
A flying cockroach, yes.
Once they start flying, you start screaming, no matter how big your muscles are, no matter how manly you are,
yes.
You run.
Correct.
You run.
And they do bite at night. Like when you sleep, they can actually bite you.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And they're very dirty. So you got married in Norway. You went back, probably, I don't know, you started your career after your gap year. Interestingly enough, talking about gap years, this is one interesting topic I had last episode with a girl from India who said that, actually, you know, people in India do not take gap years because for them, it's a waste of time. Do you think that gap year of yours in the Philippines helped you in any way when you got back to Norway and kind of started your thing there?
Yeah, definitely. That was what put me in the direction I was supposed to. And it also, I mean, it changed my perspective on the world in a deeper way. And I noticed that I could easily connect with foreigners after that, because somehow, even though I had only lived in the Philippines, I knew what it was like to be a foreigner. I knew what it was like to not understand. And I worked with, my career has been like evolving around foreigners in Norway and development work in the Philippines. And I think that ability to shift perspectives and tap into different perspectives, that makes learning more interesting, and you can take more of a, like a, an outsider look on any kind of information once you have done that. And of course, you mature. When you move abroad, you kind of mature.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for me as well, when I moved here, you know, that's one of the first things you notice is that how much you grow as a person. I guess it would have been probably even more growth for you because you're coming from Europe to the Philippines. I think anybody who goes the opposite direction would learn more, just because from the Philippines here, you already get a sense of how life is like through movies, through Western media or whatever. But coming from here to the Philippines, that would be kind of, I think, a bit more shocking and a bit more different for you. Anyway, so you mentioned about, you know, you working with a lot of foreigners, that experience actually giving you better perspective to understand these foreigners. Maybe you could give us a short idea of how you exactly worked with foreigners and what kind of experiences you were able to take with you that helped you really understand the people around you for your job in Norway.
So I worked as a counselor at some point, and I was helping people that didn't have a job. So my job was to do counseling with them and then assess like what are their strengths and possibilities. And I asked for the foreigners because that's where my strength is. I was like, give me all the foreigners. I know how to deal with like international issues. And that's my educational background as well. So there was this woman from Thailand. She was super intelligent, but Thai, like the language is just so different from Norwegian. So she wasn't able to pronounce clearly. So the government had told her that, you know, you just accept that whatever you can do is just cleaning. You can clean houses. You're not good for anything else. And she was like, but I had a proper job in Bangkok. You know, I'm somebody. I worked for a company. I know how to do things. I want to do other things. And the government was like, but your Norwegian is not good enough. But the government didn't know how to properly assess her Norwegian and her cultural skills. So when she came to me, I was able to listen to her and still understand her despite her accent. But what the government didn't pick up was that this lady in her 50s was studying finance in Norway, in Norwegian, and she was excelling. Like, she had good grades. And the Norwegian government, like the counselor in the government, I worked for a company, the counselor in the government didn't pick up on that. She just heard how she pronounced the words. And she concluded that she's not really educated or intelligent, because there are many ladies from Thailand who didn't complete their schooling in Thailand. So when they come here, they don't have a lot of opportunities. So she just put her in that box somehow. So then I got her resume. I Googled her school in Bangkok. I found that it ranked higher than the universities in Norway, you know, at that point. And I found her company, and it's a huge international company. And I'm like, this lady has a lot of qualifications. And because I was able to understand, I don't know where she is today, but I was able to understand where she came from. I was able to give her specific advice. This is what you do for an interview here. This is what you focus on in Asia. This is what you have to focus on here to present your competency in our context. This is how you do it. And in that way, I was able to help her. And I think the government, because she had this counselor and the government agency as well, they don't even know how to check a university in Asia. They don't know how to check a company, or to know that, oh, this is actually a really good school. You know, she has a good educational background. This is a smart lady. It's just that pronunciation is difficult. And a Norwegian most Norwegians would not be able to pronounce Thai properly if they learned it when they passed 45 or 50, you know.
Yeah, learning a language is tough. And I'm pretty sure Norwegian must be a tough language to learn. I've never really come across it. But obviously, when you get older, you're also, you know, it also takes you longer time to kind of get acquainted with a language. But yeah, you are correct in this sense that, you know, for a lot of probably companies or the government here, there is this lack of understanding of how it actually works in other places, because they just know what they're used to, what's in front of them. And I guess that, you know, because you were able to actually come to the Philippines and spend some time there, you got a perspective of how it actually is. Like, what you know in Norway is not the truth, because there are other truths that you just have to find a way how to compare those different truths. Because in the end of the day, they're all like truths. It's just that you're not used to it being true. So I'm glad you're able to help the woman. And actually, there's a lot of these people also I see in Germany. Sometimes they're my classmates in German class, but because, you know, they come, I don't know, from Middle East or something, they only speak Arabic or French, and it's hard for them to really get opportunities, because, you know, the people don't understand their language, they don't know what their qualifications really are and how that qualification measures up to their standards in, you know, the country you're settling into. So yeah, so let's go back to you know, your whole experience in the Philippines. So you went back to Norway, you said you started a family, but you had another opportunity to come back to the Philippines. You mentioned this opportunity was kind of development work as well. So maybe you could just give me a short, you know, idea of what you were doing there for that period of time, and what actually made you interested in, again, looking for an opportunity in the Philippines?
I had that interest ever since I stayed there for the first time. I wanted to go back. I felt like this, like I was supposed to go back. I don't know how to explain it, but I was drawn to the Philippines. I wanted to go back. I think, like, I learned so much in the Philippines. I grew so much as a person that I have a lot of the people that I look up to are Filipinos. And I wanted to give back somehow. You know, I have received so much from this country. It's been such a blessing for me. I didn't go there to receive. I went there because I wanted to be part of, contribute and learn. But I always end up being the one receiving. So I wanted to go back to give back, add value if I could. And I want to be very clear on this. I can't add any value because I'm from Europe. You know, there's nothing I can add that's not there in the Philippines. You know, the Filipinos are not lacking anything. There's a lot of competency in the Philippines, a lot of smart people. Like in the development sector, the Philippines is the country that educates a lot of development workers. Some of my studies is related to development as well and global issues. But as a Norwegian, there's nothing extra I can give. But I believe in collaborating across the globe because the problems that we have, the challenges that we have are interconnected. And we can only solve them if we work together, like the challenges of poverty, the challenges of injustice, and all of these things. We have to work together to be able to solve them. It's not sufficient that we sit in each country and just do our own effort, because what we do in Norway affects the climate in the Philippines and vice versa. How people are trafficked from the Philippines. We have perpetrators in Norway who, you know, all of these things. So we have to work together. That's the only way to do it. So that is the value I could add by going back, like being part of relating and connecting. It's one of the reasons it was so important for me to learn the language and the culture, because that's always the responsibility of the foreigner to learn. And how could I actually contribute if I didn't learn the context properly? Of course, it's not perfect. I'm still a foreigner, but I wanted to learn as much as I could.
A lot of Filipino people, when they get the chance to speak to you, would be really, really happy to know that people like you actually exist. So what I wanted to understand, so now you kind of learned a bit of the culture, you learned the language really well. How was that for your integration into your life in the Philippines?
It was very important, even though, like with many of my friends, I still speak English and Taglish, and some of them it's pure Filipino. So it's a mix, you know, because some Filipinos will speak a lot of English. But me learning, it was, I wanted to learn. I really wanted to learn. So I made a huge effort. I did the work. Like I woke up early. I studied. I repeated myself. You know, I made all these charts and then I remade my charts. And I did a lot of work to be able to learn the language. But learning it, I loved it. I love the challenge of it, but it's hard. It's hard work because you have to put in a lot of time and focus. But it's also hard work emotionally because you can measure someone's ability to use language by the quality of the relationships they have with the locals. So in the beginning, like when you only have like a baby language, you will only be able to have shallow relationships in the language you're learning, right? So if you start learning German for a season, you will only be able to speak it as a child, right? Because you're not fluent. You don't have all the nuances and you don't have the maturity in the language. So, and then you will reach a season of like older childhood, you're able to discuss a few opinions, and then you will go into like teenage years and you can kind of look at it like that. So when I look at people who live in other countries, foreigners here or in the Philippines, I can see on the quality of their relationships, how well they have adjusted. And you can learn the language without being able to build relationships because you have not connected the language to your heart. You need to connect it to your own experiences. So if you don't do that, you're not changed by the language, so to speak. So it's immersion, which requires you to always step out of your comfort zone. So for me, I had really good teachers. I had one-on-one teachers who became my friends. But I intentionally, because I knew I had to do this, I intentionally shared stories from my life that was more personal to me than what I would have shared with someone I didn't know. So before the relationship from my side actually felt safe enough, I decided to share stories that was kind of too personal in Tagalog. And that was before I had the language. So here, if you think about like all the vulnerability talk that we hear about lately, you know, learning a language makes you really vulnerable because you share your personal experiences with someone from a different culture who will not respond the way that you expect that person to respond. And we're talking about facial expressions, verbal expressions, and the whole package. And when we share something personal, our need is to be seen and heard and understood. So I need to feel seen and heard and understood, meaning I'm depending on the other person to express understanding in a way that resonates with me.
I definitely agree with all of it. And I think I'm at that stage when I'm learning, I don't know, child, like I can speak with children, that kind of level, maybe teenagers. But I can imagine how hard it must have been for you to learn the nuances. Because yeah, you can learn the grammar, you can learn everything, but you have to learn, you know, the nuances. There's more to the language than the grammar, than the right use of words or whatever. And you mentioned that you know, there are different types of communication. And yeah, which I would actually love to dive a little bit deeper in, because I went through your posts on your Instagram page, and you spoke on several posts about, you know, different types of communication, how it is different actually around the world when you talk about, you know, body language, context, eye contact, and facial expressions. What did you find in the Philippines special, or maybe like did it actually make you reflect on how you did things in Norway?
A lot. Well, one of the things that I noticed in the Philippines is that people use facial expressions a lot and body language a lot, and Norwegians don't. Like, we depend on verbal communication, so unless you've said something, it's not communicated. But in the Philippines, you can definitely communicate something intentionally or unintentionally without saying a word, you know, and and Filipinos can pick up on where people are at very easily just through reading body language and facial expressions. And that is like, you have to learn Tagalog and you have to learn that nonverbal communication as well when you move, for a Westerner who moves to Asia in general, because Asians in general communicate a lot through context and body language and facial expressions. And I absolutely love it.
Doesn't it make it more complicated?
It does in a way, and it makes you sensitive. You know, when I came back home, I was like, I think that person might be annoyed with me. And then I'm like, no, there's nothing there. She's just in a hurry, you know. She's just rushing. She's not annoyed.
This is one of the things that I still carry, obviously, because I grew up in the Philippines. Here in Europe, sometimes I overanalyze conversations by trying to guess based on body language, based on facial expressions. But in reality, they don't really mean anything. I'm just like overanalyzing things in my head. And I feel stupid sometimes. Like, are they mad? No, I should stop thinking like this.
I feel you. I've done that.
But one thing, you know, there's one thing that I always miss is that something we do in the Philippines that I'm not sure if it's done actually in other parts of Asia or in the world is that we like to use our mouth to point towards things. And for example, like if you're doing something with your hands, maybe you're working a bit, and then someone asks you, hey, where's the glass? And then I point with my mouth here in Europe to my friends. Nobody understands me. I was like, what are you doing, man? I'm like,
exactly.
Oh shit. I forgot.
I miss the eyebrows, like being able to just respond with my eyebrows because I'm busy doing something, talking to someone, and then just, you know. And I remember, like, after my first season in the Philippines, I was on my plane back home to Norway. I was moving back home. And in UK, there was a Norwegian sitting next to me waiting for the plane. And I knew because he was holding his Norwegian passport and I was holding my Norwegian passport. So he just started to talk to me, which Norwegians usually don't do, but he did. And I was so tired. I was so, like, sad leaving the Philippines. I wasn't really in the mood to chat with anyone, but I responded by lifting my eyebrows all the time because I was just like, yes, I'm hearing you. Yes, I'm hearing you. That was what I wanted to communicate. But of course, for a Norwegian, that means I'm trying to flirt with him. And all of a sudden, I realized what I was doing because he was looking at me in a weird way. He was giving me like, what is she doing? Looks. And then I was so embarrassed. I just grabbed my stuff and I left.
Oh, okay, so now I know what not to do if ever I go to Norway. Do not like use your eyebrows to communicate with other people unless you mean it. You just said that in Norway people don't really, you know, small talk. How different was the experience of people small talking to you? Because the Philippines, I think, is on the opposite end of the spectrum, wherein like everybody will just talk to you, especially if you're foreign.
People are super curious, yeah. It was a mix of really nice, like feeling very welcome and everyone's interested and wanting to talk. It was a mix of that and also a mix of knowing that that didn't mean that we already had an authentic friendship. Because if you want an authentic friendship, you still need to spend time and invest in those people. So just that friendliness is not the same as, and even if they call you a friend, it's still not the same as having that, you know, authentic established friendship. You need to spend time for that. And also at times, like when I was tired and riding in a taxi, and then you have to have the same conversation over and over again. You know, where are you from? Are you married? Do you have kids? How long have you been here? All those questions. There were days when I wasn't in the mood for that. And I would just put my headset on in the taxi for not, you know. And there were days when I enjoyed those conversations a lot.
First of all, I think the Philippines, it's easy to make acquaintances. But making good friends is, I think, as easy as it is anywhere else in the world, that you need to invest in real like time and to get to know the person. But once actually you meet their family, like once you get invited to their family, then that kind of changes everything. But just making that initial like interaction doesn't really mean much unless, yeah, you spend like more time, get to really know about each other's families. Then that's when, you know, the real friendship would kick off. Yeah, you mentioned how it is in the Philippines, and how is it back home actually?
You don't, like, it's very hard to make friends in Norway. And I listened to your episodes about friendships. I think you have two episodes where you talk about friendships.
Yeah.
And it's so relatable. Like, you're so on point with how it is, like how it's in Germany, that's also how it's in Norway. You have to be part of an activity to get to meet people. And in my city, like you mentioned this about Germany, in my city, if other Norwegians move here to my city, from Oslo to my city, for instance, they will have problems making new friends. Like, we're not really open to making new friends. We don't have time for it. Our schedules are full. We already have the friendships. Like, we have established friendships. Still, I have found myself gaining new friends since I came back. And I'm enjoying it a lot. And I think that I just brought that with me that, you know, oh, it's possible to get to know new people still.
I think it's a skill of making friends wherever you go. And I think the more perspectives you gain from your life experiences, I think the better it is for you to be able to communicate with anybody else. Just because you know more about the world, you know more about people, you know more about yourself. I don't know, this is my understanding. Although I'd like to say that I kind of have a lot of life experiences, but I still find it difficult.
Europe, like Germany and Norway, are really hard places to make new friends, especially as a foreigner.
But I'm glad you made some very meaningful friends in the Philippines. And I hope you still kind of maintain that friendship despite you moving back to Norway.
I think I will always go back to the Philippines. That's my second home.
As I browse through your Instagram page, one thing I also found interesting, an interesting topic that you mentioned, is this idea of, if you're a foreigner in a local setting, you have a friend maybe who's there with you, who's a local. What's the best way to kind of approach this social situation? Like, how do you make a foreigner kind of comfortable in that social setting? Or for example, let's say, you know, I'm Filipino, I had moved to Norway. Like, how would you help that kind of person integrate into like a local social setting?
That's hard work, but I think like keeping, it sounds like a cliche to keep an open mind, but to be specific about it, it means like setting time, giving time, letting that person express himself through a new language, and just be patient with that. Like, that's an investment to spend the time with someone and let them speak the local language, even if it's slow. And even if there might be some misunderstandings, that's a gift you can give to a foreigner. But I think as a foreigner, we want to feel included. We want to feel like we're part of the group. We don't want special treatment. We just want, even though, you know, even though you're different, you just wish to be like one of everyone else and feel that sense of belonging and being counted in, being asked for favors and help. You know, can you help me with this? That is like a huge compliment and a way to include someone. I remember like one of our partner organizations had a meeting with a lot of Filipinos and a few Norwegians. And what they did, which made the Norwegians feel so bad, this was before my time, made the Norwegians feel so bad, was that the Filipinos, because this was an NGO, so the budgets were limited. So they ordered regular Filipino food for the Filipinos. And then they went ahead and ordered a little bit more fancy food for the Norwegians, because they thought that the Norwegians might not like the Filipino food, which, of course, was not true because Norwegians love the Filipino food, but they felt so bad receiving special treatment. But the Filipinos, of course, wanted to be hospitable. They wanted to give their best, you know. But the Norwegians didn't want to be singled out. They just wanted the same as everyone else. Please don't treat us as special guests. And we want to belong. We don't want to be guests. So there is this sense now when you move abroad, yes, you can be a guest for some time when you get to know people, but at some point you just want to belong. I don't know if you can relate to that, but that's how I felt.
Definitely. I would want to belong. When you feel that you belong, it means you already, it's either the people that circle you're with understand you or you understand their culture / language. It's easier said than done. And I'm sure for you, it also took some time for that to happen, for you to be kind of included. But yeah, nothing would make me happier than to actually be able to do that. As simple as it may seem, but it's a really, really big thing. You know, an interesting topic you also talk about across different cultures is that, and you mentioned this a little bit a while back, that when you're in the Philippines, maybe you're traveling by taxi or whatever, people just ask you random questions and kind of personal questions, even though you don't know them and you have to tell this whole story over and over again. How do you now view your personal space? Because in the Philippines, like there's not a lot of personal space, especially in Manila. Like there's no space, let alone like personal space. How do you view your personal space now?
I think I'm like blending in different, it depends on who I'm with. And also I'm blending in with different people. But yes, you're right. Like those questions that the taxi drivers ask in Manila are considered personal for a Norwegian and for a European in general. I'd say, like, do you have a boyfriend? Do you have a husband? Do you have children? You know, all of those questions are considered personal. But for Filipinos, because this is the thing, for Filipinos would think that everyone has a family. So you can easily add, that's a safe topic, you know. Most people have family. It's a safe topic. You can ask about family situation. But if you ask about work, that can be a sensitive topic for Filipinos because not all Filipinos have work. Not all Filipinos were able to study. So if you don't know if the person you're with have a job or not, you might not want to ask very specific questions about job, income, education, because that might put that person in an uncomfortable place, right? So... Right. But for Norwegians, family and personal relationships are kind of private information. So you don't really ask about that. You ask about job. What did you study? You know, where did you study? What's your degree? Where do you work? Why do you work there? What is your position? You know, this is just because most people have a job. Most people, I think, yeah, almost all have an education. So that's just safe information. It's like non-threatening information.
I never really thought about that, but yeah, it is very true. In the Philippines, I probably do it unconsciously, but I would never really ask, you know, people like where they work. But you ask about stuff that you have in common, which is normally, you know, your family. Like, oh, where is your family from?
Exactly.
Are you married? That's true. And then when you come here, it's all about, you know, your level of education. What kind of company do you work for? What do you do for a living? What I thought in the beginning was, you know, people care a lot about your professional life, which in the Philippines, actually, there's less of a focus. It also happens in the dinner table when you're with your friends or your family. People don't really talk in detail about their jobs. I actually do not talk about my job almost ever. And it's not quite normal for my mom to ask me, Lauren, what do you do again for a living? It's not that I don't feel comfortable about it, but I think that they're just more kind of important topics to talk about, maybe like news or, I don't know, relationships with other people. But here it's like a very centered around your education, your job and what you did today, what your manager told you. And sometimes I'm like, okay.
I know. When we live in the Philippines this last season, I didn't know any Norwegians. Like, my husband is from Peru, so he speaks Norwegian fluently, but he's still not a Norwegian. And my daughter is, of course, Norwegian. But apart from them, I had one Indonesian friend who had a Peruvian husband. But my friends are Filipinos. My other co-workers are Filipinos. Our partners are Filipinos. So throughout those 5+ years, I mostly related to Filipinos. So Filipinos was the input I had in my life. And then we had some visitors from Norway that I didn't know. They came from another organization and they just wanted to come to our office and learn about us and about our organization and all of this. And they came to the office and they were speaking in English and Norwegian. But what I noticed was how they looked me in the eyes. Like, they were looking me straight into my eyes and I wasn't used to it anymore. I didn't know where to look because it felt like the eye contact was too intense for me. And I know that, like, among my Filipino friends and coworkers and partners, they probably feel that way about me. Like, the way I do eye contact is still probably more intense than what a Filipino would do, or a bit different. But when I met the Norwegians there, I felt it. And I felt like they were asking so many questions about our organization. And I felt questioned. Like, they were asking so much. I didn't know how to answer. I was like, is this right? Is it wrong? What am I supposed to say? I got really insecure. And it's just what they meant. I knew it at the back of my mind. Like, rationally, I knew this is the way a Norwegian shows interest. This is the way a Norwegian shows respect. This is the way they show appreciation. They ask questions. So for Norwegians, mostly when they try to connect with people, they ask questions. So a lot of Scandinavians, I think, in general, do that, like, ask a lot of questions. That's how you establish connections. I think Filipinos don't use questions that much. They use stories. So when they meet, instead of asking a lot of personal questions, maybe they ask the family stuff. But then what they will do is they will start to share stories and they will laugh and, you know, share whatever. And in that sense, that's how Filipinos will create a space to connect. Scandinavians will create it by asking questions. Filipinos will create it by sharing stories, I think.
Yes, I think you are correct there. And if these Norwegian friends, colleagues of yours would do this to a Filipino person, even if it were in English, they would maybe feel as if it were an interrogation. But yeah, in the Philippines in general, and I know this about other developing countries as well, that people, like, the conversation is very light. You share about stories that are funny, that are interesting. Maybe whenever you meet a person, you have, like, the same kind of introductory story of your life. But in general, like, it's important for you to set the mood, and that mood should always be light and simple. So yeah, Leah, I introduced a little bit, I spoke a little bit about your Instagram account. And I still find it very insightful every day because you share a lot of very kind of scholarly work as well there. But it's kind of bit bite-sized pieces of information. I mean, it may look a bit like scholarly, but in the end of the day, when you really kind of digest that information, it's very simple information, very easy to understand. And I personally, just by looking through your posts, I've learned a lot. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about this page of yours, why you started it and what keeps you, you know, motivated.
With Global Bones, when I moved to the Philippines the first time, I experienced a lot of things that I wasn't able to process properly. I just felt it. I just knew it. I knew that we don't do facial expressions the same way because I've experienced that. I knew that we don't have the same emotions, or we don't feel the same way about the same things, because I had experienced that. We don't solve conflicts the same way. I knew that because I had experienced it and seen it. So when I came back to Norway, I started to study intercultural communication and competency at the university level. And I sort of learned the words and the theories for what I had experienced. And when I compared it to my co-students who hadn't lived abroad, and I had lived abroad for more than 2 years at that point, they were able to learn the theories, but I saw that I had an additional perspective because I had experiences. I could use my, I knew when I read something, oh, this, I have seen this, I've experienced this. I could imagine it. Not all of it, of course, but a lot of it. And then as I started to work with asylum seekers, I saw that my coworkers who didn't have the background that I had weren't able to pick up on the things that I picked up on. And I picked up on it intuitively and with my knowledge as well. So I kept reading, and then I came across Filipino psychology, and I love it. You know, Filipinos did not accept Western psychology. So they started their own like branch of psychology, Filipino psychology, where they develop their own theories. And that's when I learned, like, oh, I know this is the theory that everyone reads, but here's an alternative view of that. And that comes from the Philippines. And that's when I started to dig deeper, and I learned that there are more than what I learned through my studies as well. So I start to read, and we moved abroad. And I always had this, like, how should I put it? I was annoyed by people not getting what I got. You know, people not understanding what I understood or what I saw. And I felt like I could easily connect with foreigners because of my perspectives and easily understand where many foreigners in Norway came from, why they struggled with certain things. I sort of just understood it. And that, I was like, Why doesn't anyone get this? You know, why doesn't health personnel, why doesn't psychologists get this? Why are they not trained in these issues? Because even people who attended simple intercultural trainings, I felt like something was missing. So I kept searching for that missing link. And in the end, I was like, I want to start a website or a blog or whatever, but a blog is too much for me to commit to. So when I found these Instagram therapists, you know, there are a lot of therapists on Instagram posting like just a square of simple advice. I was like, I can do this. And then I started to post about the things I knew, but that pushed me to read more. So now I keep reading articles and I'm learning new things every week. And I'm seeing it helps me because I connect with a lot of people were interested in the same topics. A lot of people who have read what I've been reading, and I don't feel alone anymore. Like, I'm not like, am I the only one seeing this? Because I now have a crowd that know the same thing. It's just that it's not like mainstream knowledge.
I think in general, this form of like Instagram communication is kind of growing now. But what makes your page what sets you apart from the rest is obviously your content is based on something more than just your thoughts. And it's all actually about, it's a combination of your experiences and actual scholarly work. And I think what's great about you is that you were actually able to live in the Philippines, not just as a foreigner, but you really made strides into integrating, and you've done so really well. And I really applaud you for that. So yeah, if you guys are interested, follow Global Bones on Instagram. I'll be leaving the link. Leah, so yeah, thank you for your time. I definitely will dive deep on this, on some of your topics in another episode, but I think you've given us a lot of information already. A lot of new terms for me as well, like cultural competency, things that I never thought, you know, I would actually learn.
Thank you. This was really nice.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pop Your Cultural Cherry. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast streaming platforms. To be updated with our latest episodes, don't forget to give us a like and a follow on our Facebook page and our Instagram account.